This is the Grand Estate Taxpayers Zoom conference, and we're here to discuss the select committee that has been set up to manage the 2020 emergency election support. So give a little background on Grand Estate Taxpayers. Basically, we're the state's oldest statewide taxpayer group. Was founded in 1990, so we're 30 years old this year. Founded by Mel Thompson, who's famous for saying low taxes is the result of low spending. So our mission is to inform, educate, and motivate New Hampshire taxpayers, lobby the legislature on their behalf. So we basically deal with statewide kinds of issues. Our website is www.grantedstatetaxpayers.org. And if you go there, you will find all kinds of commentaries, particularly on this particular issue of tonight, the select committee, as well as other things. We focus on spending, taxes, and for the last 7 years, we've looked into things like election law. And we are basically, our goal is to have a voting system in New Hampshire that's simple to understand and execute, resistant to fraud, available exclusively to residents of New Hampshire. So we've worked with prior legislators, and particularly with Representative Griffin and others, to support laws that end the loopholes allowing residents of other states to vote here. So those battles actually are still ongoing. The reason we're here tonight is we want to talk about the Select Committee, and it has been chartered, pulled together by the Secretary of State to give advice on how to disperse $3.2 million of federal money that we've gotten in order to basically respond to the coronavirus epidemic, deal with processing additional absentee ballots, and protecting the health and safety of voters and poll workers. It's a six-person committee. Barbara Griffin, Representative Barbara Griffin, is a member of the committee. So she is also a member of the New Hampshire House Election Committee and a former chair of that committee. So Barbara Griffin, representative from Goffstown, welcome to the group. Thank you for taking the time here to join us. And what I'd like to do is just ask you to explain the origin of the committee and really what its charter is, then give us an idea of how the deliberations are going and what we should expect when they make their recommendations.
Thank you, Ray. Thank you for having me. The origins of the committee are Bill Gardner. This is a pot of money that's being received by the state from the CARES bill for safe and secure elections. Years ago, when the state first got the HAVA money, which was when Motor Voter went to a lot of states, New Hampshire did not, but we got a pot of money like everybody else, there had been an advisory committee set up to make recommendations on how to expend that money, which was much more, and they had a long period of time to do it. This is $3.2 million. They're starting to issue guidance in the Secretary of State's office now. We all know sign-up period is over next Friday, and that's when they'll go to press with the ballot. So the Secretary of State's office was looking to put together an advisory group to make recommendations on how to spend this money. So Bill Gardner came up with six members. He wanted a smaller group because he wanted a faster working group. Three Republicans, three Democrats. The three Republicans are myself. The chairman is Brad Cook. You might know that name. He is the chair of the Ballot Law Commission. And he writes a column every week in New Hampshire Business Review. He's an attorney in Manchester. And the third Republican is Eugene Van Loan from Bedford, who is a sort of counsel, a retired attorney, and has worked, I believe, as a moderator in Bedford. The three Democrats are Kate Hanna from Bedford, who has a personal Democrat Party history. The Senator Sherman is the other legislator on the committee. And then the third Democrat on the committee is Kate Seaver. from Farmington. She has been the town clerk there for 41 years. So she's really been the one providing the hands-on sort of, well, that's not sort of how it works. So those are the members and the intent of this committee. And what I'm holding here is our draft report. Dan asked me if I had like slides. If I was organized, I would. Instead, I will shuffle papers in front of the camera. And this committee is to advise the Department of State on the use of $3.2 million of Federal CARES Act money, and these funds will help cover the additional costs incurred at the local level for handling and processing absentee ballots over and above the numbers of those cast 4 years ago and protecting the health and safety of voters and poll workers. That is the purpose of the funds. In regards to what they're supposed to cover. And as I said, this committee is just advisory. So there is also a pot of security money that's been received from the federal government to help secure the databases and election process. That money has already got a plan in the works that was received actually a year earlier. But if there's a need for that money, then there is some possibility for some functions to use some of that. The meetings have been occurring by Zoom, just like this committee is. The first organizational meeting was held on April 30th. We've been meeting three times a week since then for hours at a time. And they have been pretty well attended in that there were some, if you're looking at your Zoom screen, there were some meetings where we had, I don't know that we ever got into double digits when you went on the multi-screen, but it consistently over five pages of people attending. And they were, for the most part, people that are familiar to like Natalie Wells, who used to be on the election law committee with me. Good night, good evening, Natalie. some of those very same faces would have been, are on those calls all the time. And Alvin C, I don't know that Alvin is a regular at election law meetings, but I did see you at some of these committee meetings in the room. So I will say there were not, people I would recognize as Republicans at these meetings. The interest really is, I would say, it was very clear initially, the push was to get a ballot in everybody's hand. That was pretty much where the discussion started. There was actually talk about mailing things to every registered voter. Actually, some of the clerks and supervisors put the kibosh on that because they said our rolls are 10 years old. We have a lot of people on these rolls that aren't there anymore. That's going to be a huge amount of mailing. So I can tell you what the committee has come up with as a recommended first step is an every household mailer, which is informational as to the fact that if you are fearful for being in public because of COVID-19, you can now vote absentee. Up until now, an absentee had to be for a specific reason, religious reasons, for a physical disability, you were going to be out of the state. Recently, I think there was an addition for childcare reasons. I mean, it was a pretty broad spectrum of reasons. And now COVID-19 has been considered a disability. And I will tell you that the way the governor's office got to that was they looked at emergency order, I think it's 16, which had to do with the assembly of 10 or more people.
Right.
And said voting is sort of by definition, people in one space. If you're concerned about your health, you qualify to get an absentee ballot for disability. I will tell you there is a push. And it's in the report, though I don't recall that, I think we might have taken a vote on it. It was pretty much a 5-1 vote on pretty much everything on this committee, for COVID-19 to go on a new form. And they wanted a new form. And I understand it because technically, if you check off that you're disabled, you can have somebody assist you in preparing your ballot. And if COVID-19 is why you're not voting, there's no reason that you need help doing your ballot. But I'm sort of resistant personally to changing these forms because the forms are in statute. The legislature has voted on them. One town clerk said, let's put a sticky note on it that says COVID-19 lets you check this box. But there is a push to generate a new form. Again, it is a recommendation. So that sort of started the whole process, and that COVID-19 will let you do everything by mail. So then what's the question? What is the state going to pay for postage? And the recommendation is that this federal money be used to pay for the return postage for your absentee registration and your absentee ballot. That's just the way it came down. Well, I shouldn't say that that's not true. The last vote on the return postage was it was to return it. There was a tie vote, so we did not reach a consensus in regards to whether or not you could register before the election like you can on election day. So I'm sort of jumping all over the place, and I apologize. I had an outline and somehow I'm not following it.
Barbara, this is Ray. Can you explain how that process works today? Before all of this.
Right. Today, and still, you can register by applying for a registration packet. And there is a registration card that has personal information on it. And you supply documentation to verify who you are, identity, right? The infamous ID, I am who I am. And proof of your domicile, or thanks to 1264, your residence in the community. And there are various forms of proof that you generate in order to prove that you can register in the town. And traditionally, we'd go to the town clerk's office and bring our stuff and fill out the form. Over time, what's happened is it is allowed to do that by mail, but you are still expected to produce the proof, so you can produce a photocopy of it. What has happened recently is if you register on the day of the election, and that is by far when most of our registrations occur, is the same day. I have numbers here, but it is thousands of people register on election day. There is something called a qualified voter affidavit that you can fill out and not supply any proof of where you live. And so there was a 3-3 vote on the committee to change the requirement to produce stuff before the election to allow you to just do the qualified voter affidavit. So that is not, the committee did not reach a consensus on that. Now, I don't think Sununu would have gone for anything like that anyways, but the reality is this is being driven by the Secretary of State's office and the AG's office as to interpretation of the emergency orders and their application to election laws. But that is where they're going, is for you. As a matter of fact, we had a demonstration by someone at Dartmouth as to doing online applications or registration. They had actually done a form and you fill it out and you send it in. And of course, Natalie, you recall the election law discussion where people wanted everything online, that you could do it all online. And I tried to point out that Bill Gardner in particular would say, the history of New Hampshire is we have secure election because they're the people's election. And you go into the town clerk and you establish that you are who you are and you establish that you live there. And the further we get away from that, I think it can be argued the integrity of the election starts to get eroded. So that's really a big concern. I will say that nationally, this move that you're seeing because of the COVID is really happening also. There is something going on nationally called the four pillars. And one of them is to get the state to prepay the postage for registration and ballots. And it's a consistent theme in Democrat litigation around the country. So there you have it in New Hampshire. There is a recommendation coming out of this committee that the postage be prepaid for these. And the theory is that coming in contact with anybody in this time of COVID is not safe, and we need to do everything we can to encourage absentee participation. I mean, and that's the bottom line, is everything is being couched as a 2020 only, supporting as much absentee activity as possible. The report itself, as to the specific recommendations for expenditures of funds, there is an accounting firm that needs to be hired. Personal protective equipment needs to be purchased. Your community voting stations, you're going to need plastic shields. There is talk in this report about mandating people to wear masks in the voting place, and that if they do not, they are going to have to go in, I don't know, over to the children's table, like where you used to dine, and they were in a separate room at a table, and or that they would have to wait till everybody who had masks, or they would have to go outside to process stuff. But the personal protection equipment is something that the Secretary of State has been getting quotes on. I know in our town, we've sort of formed a local committee for elections, but there are things like in our town, when you check in, you go to your checklist right here, and then right next to that person is the person who hands you the ballot. So there's discussion about you should have 6 feet between those two people. Well, if you have a 6 foot table and you're both sitting at it, that's not 6 feet. So there are going to be a lot of issues with equipment for the places. Prepaid postage is one of the recommendations. There's also a big push for publicizing the election procedures so that people know that they can do all this absentee. Mm-hmm. And there's also a recommendation to lease additional machines. For any of you who have watched the polls where you have counting equipment, you put in that ballot into the machine. Well, when you get your ballot in person, there's no folds in it. Absentee ballots have folds. They jam. There is actually, at one election, somebody literally got out an iron to iron one of the ballots to get it to go through. So there's talk about leasing additional machines. So for communities, I don't know, maybe a dairy that has a big polling place, or even Goffstown has got one of the biggest polling places. If there's a huge amount of absentee ballots, maybe we get an additional machine that we can run the absentee ballots through so we don't interfere with people voting. The non-spending recommendations are that you can apply for ballots and to register by mail. Again, postage paid. There are recommendations for remote sites to drop off ballots. I've been raising a lot of issues with that. I think what we're sort of coming down to, I think you're going to see a lot of places are going to have drop-off boxes. I think somebody, Tony, I think is on here, who said he dropped off his candidacy today. I think you're going to see that. I don't have a problem with the drop box, but I want the clerk to be supervising it. I don't want it out in the parking lot. Though I will tell you, Senator Sherman says, what's the difference between mailing it back in through the post office or putting it in a box? I mean, he's sort of right in that, I would say. There's going to be an issue on staffing. There is a recommendation that all communities allow voters who are independent or undeclared to not have to go back. They will get a card that they can fill out with their name and just drop it off and say, I want to go back to undeclared. Mm-hmm. I don't know how many of your communities to go back at the end of the election. You have to remember to go to a supervisor table and say, I want to go back. And they're saying there's no need for that personal contact. There's a provision in the statute, hand the undeclared voter a card when they check in and let them just hand the card to somebody when they finish. There are other things in regards to website updates. I will tell you, we heard from the Libertarians and an election law. You might recall the Libertarians were on the ballot last election. They are not this time because they didn't get the percentage of votes, so they were requesting that there be a law change, because to get the 3,000 signatures they need by petition in the time of COVID is very difficult. They're saying they can't do it. We are including that in the report, though, without a recommendation. So that's really what's happening as far as the special election committee goes. The report hopefully will be finalized tomorrow. I want to say one thing today. After our meeting, new guidance came out. It has been approved by the AG and the Secretary of State, and it is COVID-19 related voting procedures. And it is a fairly extensive packet in regards to registering absentee by mail and register vote and absentee voting by mail. And it will give you information on the forms and how to do it, and includes the forms, and there will be direct links on the site. So they have concluded that the COVID issues not only relate to absentee ballots, but relate to registration. But the packet that they have issued indicates you need to provide the proofs.
Right.
So hopefully we will be staying with that. Given that this is now the official guidance that's come out, I don't have any reason to think this is going to change at this point. You will still be able to do a qualified voter affidavit on the day, same day registration. Nothing's really going to change about that. That's certainly not going away. The issue was keeping it from expanding to other times. So that's the status. It's been pretty frustrating for me because, like many of the election law things, and former members of that committee can attest to this, that the people who come out are the people who are the America votes, who are into gross expansion of somebody's ability to vote with less and less proof of ties to the community that they're voting in. But it would appear that this committee at the end of it is sort of pulling it together and going forward. So I'm hoping there's not too much damage done by that. There is a lot of election stuff happening in the legislature. And at some point, if there's time, I'd like to mention that. But that's where the election this committee is at this point in time. The report is drafted. It actually will probably be online tonight or tomorrow morning, because there's a public comment period in tomorrow's meeting. Agendas can be obtained on the Secretary of State's website. If you go to the Secretary of State's website, sort of right in the middle, there is something about Bill Gardner announcing the special committee. You can hit that right link. It takes you to all the material. So that's where it is.
You said that there's going to be a public comment period.
Just part of the meeting tomorrow. It won't be
okay.
Yeah. We've been getting a lot of public comments since April 30th. Before mm-hmm. we met, we were getting emails from lots of people.
You guys have not yet made your recommendations. Can you tell me? I'm a little intrigued that there's actually a statement out from the Secretary of State and the AG regarding voting during COVID. How does that match up with where you people were going? Because I thought you were supposed to recommend things.
I'm not sure about your question. What happened is that there, if you might recall, before this happened, there was a public push going on about what are we going to do about the elections? Right. We need to have all mail-in registration, because that's the other thing that's being pushed nationally. And you've seen some governor's order that elections are going to be all mail-in. And so on April 10th, which is before this committee was formed, there was an opinion issued on elections operations during the state of the emergency. And that's when the governor's office sort of took the governor actually didn't do this. It was Bill Gardner and the AG's office issued the statement that COVID-19, if you were afraid of it, that was a disability and you could vote. So this committee is on that page. This committee is all about, none of us should have contact with anybody else for God knows how long, because it's not safe. I don't know how many times today I said, but I'm not safe when I leave my house every day. you know, right. any day. But their position is the best thing for the population of New Hampshire would be all absentee ballots.
Mm-hmm.
I will tell you that Kathy Seaver, the town clerk from Farmington, is sort of with me in that she thinks there's going to be a lot more in-person voting than people think.
Right.